In front of Gucci in the winter, I seen you with your girl, walking, in your chinchilla fur. I was laid up in the cool back shader, looking at your face just pure with no makeup. A little bit of MAC lip gloss, hair in a bun well done, looking for a ring, I seen none. So I hopped out the coupe and hot the suit to stop and introduce like I'm shining. You my destiny, in your diamond cluster, too much just to touch you.
This is Robin, the program manager at CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco, the best astronomy program on the planet.
Put it in your purse and call.
On the telephone, she heard my voice. Tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. If my Rolls Royce is not the ladies, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Mercedes. If my Mercedes would have full of a disease. My fire bird, if my fire bird can let baby curve. Girl, put your ass and the dumb at your butt.
You're getting closer. My player days is over. Well, maybe not completely, but still in all. Come here, let's see a head on my bed. And let me get between your legs. Lay on your back.
After Talk on CITR 101.9. This is Marco. Welcome. And I'm back from Hawaii. So I was on the Mauna Kea. I was in Oahu and a lot of other places, so it was a lot of fun. I went to the top. It's 4,200 meters plus. It's very cold up there, and it has a bunch of telescopes. So I'm going to run over the telescopes now. Gemini telescope, an 8.1-meter optical infrared telescope operated by a consortium of seven countries. I think Canada's in there. Then there's the Canada-France-Hawaii telescope, 3.6-meter optical telescope operated by Canada, France, and Hawaii. The United Kingdom Infrared Telescope, a 3.8-meter infrared telescope operated by the United Kingdom. And then there is a University of Hawaii Hilo Educational Telescope for their students. The first telescope on the mountain, a 0.6-meter diameter reflector, was placed on the site in 1969. Then there's something called the James Clerk Maxwell Telescope, 15-meter diameter telescope for submillimeter astronomy operated by United Kingdom, Netherlands, and Canada. So Canada's busy up there. There is something called a submillimeter array, which 8 6-meter submillimeter antennas operated by Smithsonian Astrophysical. Then there's the Subaru telescope, 8.3-meter diameter optical infrared telescope operated by Japan. There's something called the Keck Observatory. There's tours there every day from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. I got there at 4:30, so I missed it. It's 2 10-meter telescope operated by Caltech and University of California. Then there's the NASA Infrared Telescope Facility, a 3-meter diameter infrared telescope operated by the University of Hawaii for NASA. And then there's, the James Keck. So it's got two buildings. I'm sorry, it's WM Keck Observatory. So one telescope in one building, another telescope in another building. So I was in Hawaii, nice and sunny. I saw the Milky Way. It wasn't as good as when I saw it in the Route 66. It was much better on Route 66. Could have been that we were 6 days away from a full moon, so the skies were not as dark as they could be. So I'm back. Yes, I am back. And happy or unhappy? Well, was nice to be in the sun. So I opened the page here and it's not opening, so I guess I got to go back to the front. What I wanted to do was talk about the Maria storm. And why do I want to talk about the storm in Maria? Because NASA measures Hurricane Maria's torrential rainfall. So NASA's got a bunch of satellites in space and they are measuring the storm that hit Puerto Rico. So this is dated September 21st, 2017. It's about Maria. It says NASA measures Hurricane Maria's torrential rainfall. Seas eye reopen. Okay, so I'm going to start reading the article. Hurricane Maria has caused catastrophic flooding in Puerto Rico and left a wake of heavy rainfall that NASA measured using a fleet of satellites in space. NASA satellite imaging also saw Maria's eye close up as it tracked across Puerto Rico and reopened after it exit. Okay, so calculating Maria's rainfall. I saw in the news there was up to 3 feet in some places in a 24-hour period. Okay, so here's the caption under the photo. It shows the Caribbean, Puerto Rico, being inundated by the storm. And it says from September 17th to early September 21st, 2017, NASA's IMERG, now that's some kind of telescope, I'll try to get what that means, estimated that rainfall totals greater than 10 inches were common along Maria's track. IMERG rainfall estimates indicated that more than 20 inches of rain fell over a large part of Puerto Rico. During that period, Maria dropped heavy rain in the Leeward Islands, Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico. So NASA is not only involved in this. NASA monitors the Arctic ice sheet and a lot of other things. Whenever there's a storm, NASA's got all these satellites up in space circling the Earth, and they can monitor it. So it shows a color map where heavy rainfall is in purple or red, and there's large areas which have a lot of purple and red, and other places were also hit by Maria, other little places on the storm path. So there's Puerto Rico, I think, was the one that was hit, and there was a few hurricanes or storms before hitting Houston, Texas, and all along Florida. So I'm going to go back to the article now. The Global Participation Measurement Mission, or GPM, core satellite, a joint mission between NASA and the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, can measure rainfall from space. That rainfall data, combined with data from other satellites, provided a tally of Hurricane Maria's rainfall over the course of several days. At NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland, NASA's integrated multi-satellite retrievals for GPM, or IMERG, so that's what it stands for, IMERG, integrated multi-satellite retrievals for GPM. So sometimes these acronyms make sense, like NASA, National Aeronautics Space Administration. Now that makes sense. And HST is another one, Hubble Space Telescope. Those make sense. Now, when something says IMERG, integrated multi-satellite retrievals for GPM, well, you're kind of not sure what that means. So anyway, IMERG data were used to estimate the total amount of rain that Hurricane Maria dropped from September 17th to early September 21st. During that period, Maria dropped heavy rain in the Leeward Islands, Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico. So Leeward Islands, it's on the path there. It looks very, very small. All these places are so small. And the Virgin Islands was on the path. I don't know how much rain it received, but there's a lot of little islands here that they don't even name. So I bet a lot of islands got hit. So just give me a second. I'm going to go away from the mic. There's an island called G. I don't know. I can't read it. Okay. So anyway, during that period, Maria dropped heavy rain in the Leeward Islands, Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico. IMERG estimated that rainfall totals greater than 10 inches were common along Maria's track. IMERG rainfall estimates indicated that more than 20 inches of rain fell over a large part of Puerto Rico. Extreme flooding was reported in the streets of San Juan, the capital of Puerto Rico. The National Weather Service issued flash floods warning for the entire island. Hurricane Maria has now moved to the northwest of Puerto Rico, but is still expected to contribute to rainfall over the island on Friday. Feeder bands of thunderstorms are transporting rain over Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic, even as the hurricanes move towards the Turks and Caicos Islands. So it brings up a question, at least in my mind. How frequent now are these storms going to be? Is global warming finally going to hit us hard where there's a lot of storms all at once? I'm not sure. But anyway, there are, I think, three storms lately, one in Houston, one in Florida, and this one. So the frequency of storms seems to be getting higher. Okay, so I'm going to take a break now. When I come back, I'm going to change the topic, and I'm going to talk about something else. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
Thank you. This is my life. I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I
breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait to impress my friends with my astounding knowledge of
cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electropop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle, basic, brown.
Breakfast with the Browns
on CITR 101.9 FM every Monday morning
from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow, the clouds thick, and we're making it like hell. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it like you. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're...
You know, you can give 100 examples of what it isn't, but you, man, you're going to have a hell of a time saying what it is.
This is going out to the whole wide west side. Know what I'm saying? Break it down for me. Steady mobbing, rock, rock on.
I was just a young boy living in the hub city.
Eastside Compton.
Back in the days when Ice Cube and Easy had everything. Talking about boy, you can't.
This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC.
Too short, bumped in every super boat and told us all how to ride for the west coast.
My people, you can leave me where you at, throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the Bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Take a look around, we got the whole world locked down. No, don't stop, won't stop.
That's why I put it down for the west side.
Not long ago,
oh no.
We were still in 40s at the liquor store.
Oh no.
Mama started tripping, so it's time to go.
Out to the park with the locusts.
Everybody broke smoking roaches.
DJ Quick West the had every claiming he was from the CPT.
Y'all remember?
One time tried to clown. We had to burn this bitch on down.
One time for my was in incarceration.
Place a dime with you for having lots of patience.
For my sisters at the county built.
I got some Westside love for all you ghetto children.
3 times for my that passed away.
And pray for better days.
One day everything's gonna be fine. But until that day, my only reply is
Westside till I
my
die.
In the air,
wave them like you just don't care.
From LA to the Bay, what you say? All day, every day.
On the west side, and we're on the west side at UBC. So, I was just looking over some of the telescopes at the Mauna Kea site on the mountain in Hawaii, and Canada's involved in, I believe, three of them. There's one called the Canada-France-Hawaii Telescope. It's a 3.6-meter telescope. There is also the Gemini Northern Telescope, 8.1-meter telescope. And there is something called the James Clerk Maxwell Telescope that is a 15-meter telescope. So Canada's really involved in there. Very good for Canada. It should have kept more satellites up there, like the MOST telescope. It cut the funding, but we don't have the funds of the U.S. But talking about the U.S., let's talk about a great mission. September 15th, that's when it came to a close. It was called Cassini. It arrived in Saturn, I believe, in 2004, and it stayed in the ring planet system for 13 years. This mission was extended twice, and it was running out of fuel, so instead of just a haphazard crash into a moon, which NASA didn't want, they didn't want the spacecraft to possibly contaminate any moons that might contain life, so they crashed it. It dove in between the rings of Saturn and Saturn itself, and then it burnt up in the atmosphere. So let's talk a little bit about that. It's called NASA's Cassini spacecraft ends its historic exploration of Saturn. So this was released September 15th, which was last Friday. I think that's when it came to a close. That's when it plunged into the atmosphere. So here goes. I'm going to read the article. A thrilling epoch in the exploration of our solar system came to a close today as NASA's Cassini spacecraft made a fateful plunge into the atmosphere of Saturn, ending its 13-year tour of the ring planet. So when I said today, I'm just reading the article, which was dated September 15th. So it crashed into the planet 6 days ago. So says Thomas Zurbuchen, Associate Administrator for NASA's Science Mission Directorate at NASA headquarters in Washington, and quote, "This is the final chapter of an amazing mission, but it's also a new beginning. Cassini's discovery of ocean worlds at Titan and Enceladus changed everything, shaking our views to the core about surprising places to search for potential life beyond Earth." So I believe Titan and Enceladus couldn't be more different worlds. Titan is the second largest moon in the solar system. It is the largest moon in the Saturn system. And Titan has a lot of hydrocarbon clouds in its atmosphere. It's got methane lakes and rivers and oceans, and it's got mountains. So it was a nice world, and there was a lot of surprises about the chemistry of Titan, its atmosphere in particular. When the hydrocarbons are hit by sunlight, they react and they create all new compounds that NASA scientists didn't even suspect. So that was a good surprise. And Enceladus has, they believe, an ocean beneath its surface. And scientists speculate that Enceladus, even though it's quite a bit smaller than Earth, it contains more water than all of Earth. So back to the article. Telemetry received during the plunge indicates that as expected, Cassini entered Saturn's atmosphere with its thrusters firing to maintain stability as it sent back a unique final set of science observations. Loss of contact with the Cassini spacecraft occurred at 7:55 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time or 4:55 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. That was on Friday, September 15th, with the signal received by NASA's Deep Space Network antenna complex in Canberra, Australia. So when this happened at 4:55 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, I was on a plane from Hawaii, 2 hours from Vancouver. So could I have seen it if I had a telescope on the plane? Who knows? Okay, obviously not. So there's a photo here that says, Earl Mize, Program Manager for NASA's Cassini spacecraft at JPL, and Junior Webster, Spacecraft Operations Team Manager for the Cassini mission at Saturn, embracing an emotional moment for the entire Cassini team after the spacecraft plunged into Saturn Friday, September 15th, 2017. I still have to send an email, a congratulatory email, to Ms. Trina Ray. She's one of the mission scientists. People may remember I had her on about a year and a half ago. We talked about Cassini. Now that it's over, she might have time. I've emailed her a few times since. But of course, she has to be so busy because she is one of the mission scientists. She was on the team that was planning the final plunge. So I wonder what that feels like to work on a project for 13 years. And not just that, I think it took 4 or 5 years for it to fly there. So a lot of them worked on this project 17, 18, even 20 years. And then it comes to a close. Well, they'll have a lot of data to examine, and it will rewrite all the science about Saturn. So back to the article. So says Michael Watkins, director of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, which manages the Cassini mission for the agency. JPL also designed, developed, and assembled the spacecraft. So here's the quote from Michael Watson, director of NASA's JPL. Quote, "It's a bittersweet but fond farewell to a mission that leaves behind an incredible wealth of discoveries that have changed our view of Saturn and our solar system and will continue to shape future missions and research." End quote. So this was really a spectacular feat. Imagine the planning stage, then building the spacecraft, then sending it on its 4 or 5 year flight, then managing it for 13 years while it flew, and just discovered so many things about the rings, about the moons, the moonlets, water on certain moons. It's just incredible. And Titan was probably the biggest object of the scientists' attention because they flew through it and over it many times. And as we know, there's hydrocarbon clouds, there's a hydrocarbon atmosphere. You can't see through Titan. So there's a movie called Gattaca. I forget what the guy's name is, but they were sending a spacecraft into space and with astronauts to, I believe, Saturn or something. And they were talking about Titan, how they couldn't see through its atmosphere. Well, now we can because Cassini went there. So that movie has to be updated, maybe. Okay, so back to the article. As planned, data from 8 of Cassini's science instruments was beamed back to Earth. Mission scientists will examine the spacecraft's final observation in the coming weeks for new insights about Saturn, including hints about the planet's formation and evolution and processes occurring in its atmosphere. Okay, so now there's a little, there's quite a nice photo here, and it says, this montage of images made from data obtained by Cassini's visual and infrared mapping spectrometer shows the location on Saturn where the NASA spacecraft entered Saturn's atmosphere on September 15th, 2017. The spacecraft entered the atmosphere at 9.4 degrees north latitude, 53 degrees west latitude. And there's a nice photo, and it shows a circle where it entered. And I believe it was burned up and then crushed in the atmosphere because it's quite an intense atmosphere. So says Linda Spilker, Cassini project scientist at JPL, end quote, things will never be quite the same for those of us on the Cassini team now that the spacecraft is no longer flying. But we take comfort knowing that every time we look up at Saturn in the night sky, part of Cassini will be there too. So imagine sinking your heart into, I know those scientists worked day and night for 13 years. It's a labor of love, and they were lucky to have been able to participate in this project. So back to the article. Cassini launched in 1997. So it took 7 years to fly. So it was in the Saturn system for 13 years. It took 7 years to get there. So that's 20 years. And imagine the planning and the building of the spacecraft. So 25 to 30 years, some people were involved in this. So again, Cassini launched in 1997 from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station in Florida and arrived at Saturn in 2004. NASA extended its mission twice, first for 2 years and then for 7 more. The second mission extension provided dozens of flyby of the planet's icy moons using the spacecraft's remaining rocket propellant along the way. Cassini finished its tour of the Saturn system with its grand finale, capped by Friday's intentional plunge into the planet to ensure Saturn's moons, particularly Enceladus, with its subsurface ocean and signs of hydrothermal activity, remain pristine for future exploration. While the Cassini spacecraft is gone, its enormous collection of data about Saturn, the giant planet, its magnetosphere, rings and moons will continue to yield new discoveries for decades to come. So says Dr. Linda Spilker again, and quote, Cassini may be gone, but its scientific bounty will keep us occupied for many years. We've only scratched the surface of what we can learn from the mountain of data it has sent back over time. An online toolkit with information and resources for Cassini's grand finale is available at https://saturn.jpl.nasa.gov/grand finale. So there are lots, and you can see it on YouTube too. So go to YouTube, you can see the final dive. The Cassini-Huygens mission is a cooperative project of NASA, the ESA, which is the European Space Agency, and the Italian Space Agency, JPL, which is the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, a division of Caltech in Pasadena, manages the mission for NASA's Science Mission Director in Washington. So remember, the California Institute of Technology is where JPL is, and it is in Pasadena, and it is now rated the best university in the world, and I bet with all those scientists there. So I'll try to get you more on Cassini. There's a person called Preston Deitches, Jet Propulsion Laboratory. I've talked to him before. That's how I got Miss Trina Ray. So let me tell you something about Miss Trina Ray. She makes me feel like I'm her peer. Like when I talk with her, she's so nice to me. She dresses me politely, gracefully, not like the genius that she is. and she's not snobby. She's the total opposite. She's such a great person, and it was my pleasure to interview her. So I hope I can interview her again, but she was wonderful, and she's just one of the many wonderful scientists that have been, imagine dedicating 20 years of your life, and then your spacecraft disappears. A heavy heart, but they worked hard at it. They had a lot of data. They're still going to spend years now combing over more of this data, and I hope to get her on again because she was wonderful. She addressed me like an equal, and you know what? She is a brilliant woman, and she is a brilliant scientist with all those other brilliant people, and how dedicated they were, and how nicely she treated me. So I am going to try to get her on again. So thank you for listening. This is Marco. You have been listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.